Coach P's perspective.
Serve God, work hard, family coaching, play my part. Faith is something that I use every day, game changing moves. Sit back, relax, and listen. Inspiration is my mission. Twitch, got your back, Coach 96. We do got your back. PCO be in my brain, CSL is in my veins. Ain't no stopping or no blocking. Heaven's where I aim. In order to succeed, we cannot be lazy. Repping Jesus all the time, and yeah, we're going crazy.
Hey fam and friends, hey, welcome to Coach P's Perspective, where coaching, inspiration, and faith collide. This is your host, Coach Chad Parks, and thank you for joining me today. I'm a college All-American wrestler, coach, and the author of the best-selling book, Game Changing Moves. This background has allowed me to train elite athletes, coaches, and high performers from all walks of life. So if you need a pick-me-up, a kick in the pants, or a coach in your corner, I got you right here on Coach P's Perspective. Let's go. Hey, I want to give a real quick shout out to my friends over at Terra Grappler. If you've never experienced Terra Grappler wrestling shoes, then you're missing out. You see, Terra Grappler has been re-engineering the standard wrestling shoes for about the last 3 years. Their comfy and stretchy Mattiform integrated sock-like layer is something you can't live without once you've tried it. I use Terra Grapplers. Zahid Valencia uses Terra Grapplers. And all I got to say is this. There's certainly something different to the feel versus traditional wrestling shoes. And for those of you listening now, you can actually get $10 off a pair of Terra Grappler wrestling shoes by using the code COACHP10. The code is COACHP10. Experience them for yourself. I promise you won't be disappointed. All right. Hey, welcome to another episode of Coach P's Perspective. Man, I am pumped to say I have a tremendous pastor on here, Larry Bry. I know him. I know of him because of his church, but also through the wrestling world, which we have a lot of wrestlers and wrestling coaches that listen to this podcast. So it's a small wrestling world or community. Larry is part of that. And again, he is at Elevation Church with Pastor Stephen Furtick, which is one of my favorite podcasts and churches to listen to. I'm on their sermons all the time. Yeah. So while I'm working, while I'm working around the house, got your sermons on. So anyway, Larry, man, thanks for being here.
Man, it's a privilege. I love what you're doing. Anytime I can take two of my favorite things and let them overlap, you know, faith and then wrestling, that's a win for me. So I'm excited to spend a little bit of time with you today, learn a little more about what you're doing, but also share a little bit about what we're doing here at Elevation Church.
Yeah, absolutely. So, all right, well, let's just start like this, man. So people that are listening get to know your background. I mean, where'd you grow up? What sports did you do? Kind of how'd you get into the sports world?
Well, I'm a Minnesota kid. So I grew up in the frozen tundra of Minnesota. One of five kids. It was a small farming town. So one stoplight into town, lots of tractors. Everybody grew up on a farm. One of five kids, four boys and a girl. So it was Lonnie, Luann, Leslie, Larry, and Lance. It was a good Catholic family from Minnesota. And my older brothers, they started wrestling when they were young. So I started, like, because my older brothers just beat the daylights out of me. But then I started wrestling in first grade. Did it all through elementary school, high school, and into college. So it's always been a big part of my family and my journey. We were a big sports family, but wrestling was the main one. We played baseball and football, because when you're in a small town, everybody's got to play everything. But wrestling was the one that we really zoomed in on as a family.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah, if you have older brothers that wrestle, you kind of don't have a choice.
Always. Because, again, that older brother's strength. I still remember the day that I could beat my older brother. Like, that was, like, one of the best days of my life, because you spend your whole life getting beat up by them. Then you finally have the breakthrough moment where you know you can beat them. That's like a great moment.
Yep, absolutely. So, well, my older brother was played football a little bit, didn't wrestle. My dad is a really highly successful wrestling coach in Oklahoma. And so he would whoop up on me whenever I was young, get to wrestle my dad all the time. Of course, I wrestle my boys all the time, which is always fun. And I think it probably wasn't until I was wrestling in college. I came home and I kind of figured at this point I could maybe beat my dad. I never did it though, man. If I had an older brother that wrestled, I would want to whoop him. But my dad, I was kind of like, I can't do that, man. But getting an older brother, that'd be awesome.
It was, because my brother, who's directly older than me, he's 3 years older than me. So it wasn't until my junior year of high school that I finally beat him.
Yeah.
And so it was a pretty satisfying moment there.
Yeah, no doubt. And then where did you end up wrestling at in college?
Morehead State, D2 school up in Minnesota. And so I did in my freshman year, and then I got this big old scar on my elbow here. I blew up my elbow my freshman year, and that's what kind of ended that whole college career.
Yeah.
And so it was a sad moment when that happened.
Yeah. Elbow injuries are nasty, but but even wrestling a year in college, and of course growing up as a wrestler, the good and the bad, man, how awesome the sport is, also how difficult the sport is. And you talked about, we have the crossover with wrestling and faith. So I always tell my athletes, I'm like, hey man, like Genesis 32, God was a wrestler, and so when I'm teaching technique, I'm like, all right, see the way the inside of your foot goes when you step right behind the heel, it fits like God was thinking about wrestling and he was making us. And kids always kind of laugh and things like that. But what are just a few of the, I would say, main lessons that you still like take away from wrestling that you can apply to your life today? Some of the things that really helped you be successful in what you do now.
I don't know what it was like for you, Chad, but for wrestling was a place of escape for me. Mm-hmm. I grew up in a crazy home, and I love my dad, but he made a lot of bad choices that had consequences that, the rest of the family had to pay. And it was just a hard home. So for wrestling, for me, became a place of escape. It's a place where the world is chaotic, but I can control this space right here. That didn't mean I was one, but it was a place I could escape to, and I could have some normalcy, and I could have some consistency. And so wrestling, man, it was this thing that wasn't just a sport. It was a place of hiding. It was a place of just getting away from all of that crazy stuff. And so what you learn there is you learn safe places. But once that's taken away from you, the hardest thing is now, how do you replace that? And so for me in college, that place that used to be, I would run to and I'd find safety, and that's gone. Now what? Now where do you go? And so one of the principles I try to live by is to know where I'm taking all of that stuff, all that pain, all this stuff. Chad, I remember I made the varsity wrestling team of the high school in seventh grade. And first seventh grader to ever make the varsity team. I was pretty excited about it. Go to my very first match. I'm wrestling a guy that had placed fourth in state the year before. He's a junior. He's got a full mustache. I don't have any armpit hairs. Like, yeah. I'm not even at the weight class. And my older brother Butch is on the team. And I wrestle my match. I lost 7-2. And my dad came to the meet that night. But my dad had a problem with alcoholism, and he showed up that night. He had been drinking too much, and you heard him in the stands, and everybody else is like, Larry, you did so good. They call me LB. LB, you did so good. You didn't get stuck. But all I heard in the stands was my dad yelling, wait till you get home, boy. Wait till you get home. And I got home, and it wasn't so good. And then dad said, hey, if you're going to lose, I'd rather you be a quitter than a loser. So if you're going to lose, then you better quit. And so what it taught me in that point is like, I can never really count on anybody else. Mm-hmm. But I remember this is that part of that faith journey. It wasn't until for me a relationship with Jesus became real until I was, 26. But I was on this faith journey even at this younger age. But what I learned at that age in seventh grade is like, I can't depend on anybody. And it made me get real angry at God. And I'm like, if my earthly father doesn't even love me, why on earth would this heavenly father have anything to do with me? And if you're a good God, why would you let these bad things happen? And so that was such a struggle for me. And I carried that into my adulthood. So one of the principles I operate with, Chad, to get back to your question, is I always try to understand, like, where am I taking my emotions? Where am I taking all those feelings? Where am I taking all of that disappointment? I used to take it to the wrestling room. When that gets replaced, now where you took it? I took it to a lot of dysfunctional places in there, but it wasn't until I found Jesus that I found the place that I can actually take those things.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's really good. One of the things I love about wrestling, I love about just working out in general. So I still, cause I coach and I still work out with my athletes, and for an hour, 2 hours, whatever it is, you can go in and you have that thing to focus on, and you can forget totally about the rest of the world. Yeah. You don't have to think about anything else. But ultimately, you feel better. Your body is released, dopamine and endorphins and all that. And you feel better. Yeah. And you're more clear headed when you walk out, you can deal with it. But ultimately, life's issues are still there and you got to deal with them.
Yeah.
So yeah, you're either taking them on by yourself or you're taking them on with the help of God. It's, you know, and I can say like, even I gave my life to Christ when I was 19, I was a freshman in college. And, but when I finished, I had this thought while you were talking about that. When I finished wrestling in college, I thought like, man, like I'm a strong Christian and I'm not just wrestling for me. I'm wrestling because I have this platform. I can glorify God. But there was still a 6 month or 1 year period there, I would say, when I was done competing, where I felt super lost. Like I knew what I wanted to do. I want to be a teacher, I want to be a coach, but I'm like, I don't have wrestling. I don't have that safe place. I don't have this place to turn to anymore that I didn't think my identity was built on, but I built a lot of my identity on that thing, you know?
Yes. It's so real because what you put your confidence in determines when it leaves.
Mm.
It is. So when my confidence was in my wrestling, when it left, so left my confidence. Same way it is as a man, like with a job and a career, when that career is there, if my confidence is in that thing, when that's gone, I have no confidence. And that's where I found Christ. It's like in Christ, I can put my confidence and that's never going to leave. It's never going to change. So for me, man, when I coming out of college, when I lost my wrestling, I went off the deep end for many years. I wish it would have been 6 months. It was years. And I came home one night in graduate college and I'd been out drinking. I was drunk. I came home and I looked in the mirror. And Chad, I was like, I'm becoming the person I hated the most. I saw my dad in the mirror.
Yeah.
And I was like, so what you try to run from, you will end up recreating. Mm. That's the thing about struggle. Man, God's not punishing us in it, but he's trying to show us his grace in it. But a vision for our life, Chad, is never running from something. It's running to something. So for me, my whole life was just running from being with my home and being with my dad.
Mm.
But that wasn't a vision. And once what I thought I was running towards, you know, wrestling and college, like once that's gone, I'm like, now what? Now who am I?
Mm-hmm.
And I covered that pain up with alcohol. And a lot of us are doing that. We medicate to numb the pain so we don't have to deal with the struggle. And wrestling is a beautiful thing. But when it becomes a crutch that's just getting us through the pain, that's where when that's gone, the pain is that's all you have left.
Yeah.
So the beauty of the life lessons, and this is why I love your podcast, is you pull up these principles that, hey, while we're doing it, we can actually build, take things that we can build our life on that will be there after wrestling's over.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, while we're talking about this, man, tell me about, I mean, how did you give your life to Christ? When did you give your life to Christ? Like, what was the turnaround for you?
But that was a crazy story. Again, I mentioned it a little bit of it. Growing up Catholic, we would go to church holy days of obligation a couple times a year. And I had heard about a religion, like if I do these rules or if I say these prayers, then I'm good with God. And so I remember, gosh, in college arguing with people who would be like, of course I'm a good person. I'm going to go to heaven. You're going to tell me good people are going to burn in hell? And these are people who had a relationship. I really wanted what they had. I just didn't know what it was. But it wasn't until I was in graduate college and I was in my darkest place. I was in this place that I trusted a friend enough to go to a Bible study in the morning, but then I would go out with this other group of people to the bar and get drunk at night. After a while of living in both worlds, I didn't feel like I belonged in either one. Because when I'm at the Bible study, I felt like I was so filthy that I didn't belong there. But then when I go to the bar, I'm feeling some conviction like, man, is this really all there is to life? Is this really what your goal is, to find a girl to have one night? That is that really like the goal of your life, Larry? Like, is that it? And so it's in that point that I came home and I realized like, there's gotta be more to this than more to life than this. And that's when I turned to Jesus. And for the first time ever, when I asked him in my heart, it clicked. And now I'm like, this is what they meant by relationship. Oh, I just thought if I do enough good things, I'm good with God. Oh, relationship. Gotcha. He died for my sin, not just for me to change my behavior, conform to an image of what's acceptable and what's not. Mm-hmm. Okay. Yeah, that's a little bit of my journey.
Yeah, that's good. I just had a conversation with a guy a couple of days ago who was a wrestler, and we were talking and we were saying sometimes as athletes, we've had to earn everything. And now as Christians, you still got to battle that mindset of God's grace and having a relationship with God and actually seeing him. Because I'm a father of four now. And I know for me, like I often saw God. Yeah, we got big families. I often saw God as sort of like this angry, punishing type father, you know? And so I had to earn. And so I still kind of sometimes fall back into that. I mess up and I feel like I got to earn my way back. And I got to realize, like, man, okay, I can't earn my way back. Like, that's why Jesus died. You know, it's why he died on the cross for us. But it's habits are hard to break, maybe.
They are. And I think what you're saying is so key to what it means to be a person of faith. Because it's easy to have faith when I get what I want and my plans line up like I thought they should have been. I don't need a lot of faith when that happens. Mm-hmm. But how about when things don't go according to plan? Or we start to wrestle with, is there something bigger than just me having a big 401k, having a boat and dying one day? Is that really all there is to life? And you've got four kids, I got four kids. What made me really see God at a whole nother level is once I started to be a parent, mm-hmm. once I started to be a father, and there was a good side to it and a bad side to it. The bad side to it was I felt like there's no way I can be a good father because I've never seen a good example for how to do it. So there's always been a part of me that feels like I can't give my kids what they need because I'd never had it myself. Mm-hmm. That's just honest. But that's where God so encourages me. He says, now you've created space for me. Because that gap can only be filled by my grace. So there's that level of parenting that I feel inadequate. But then there's another level where I feel like, man, like I'm passing on to my kids my frustration. Because a lot of my parenting can turn into quit, don't stop. And I'm simply trying to get the kids to stop their behavior that's frustrating me. Mm-hmm. And if they stop frustrating me, they're now good kids. Yeah. That's just all my dad did to me too. Like, am I really just trying to change their behavior or shape their character? Like, yeah. So as a parent, like I'm trying to see God's not trying to modify my behavior. He's trying to change my heart. And from the heart, everything else will take care of itself. But most of the parenting I saw was just stop doing that because you're pissing dad off. Mm-hmm. Quit doing that because he's frustrated. Gotcha. That helped me see like, oh, God, you care more about my heart than my hands or my behavior at this moment.
Yeah. So when's your parenting book come out or your fathering? For real, that was so good, man. So good.
And it helps me because I realize a lot of us operate according to conditioning way more than creation.
Absolutely.
So dad comes home frustrated and mad. They're the thermostat for the house. So dad comes home frustrated. Everybody's like, oh, don't make dad mad. And they manage around his atmosphere. They're managed around his emotions all the time. So the kids are conditioned to not make dad mad. Now they get their own kids. How do they operate? The same way. That's generational conditioning.
Yeah.
That's where I realized is like, when I see my kids displaying the worst parts of me, that's because I've conditioned that into them. That's not part of God's original wiring. I remember my wife said to me, Chad, once she goes, I looked at her, I said, stop pushing my buttons. And she said back, she goes, your button is so big, I can't miss it. And what I realized is like, that's not how I'm made. That's not how I'm wired. Because sometimes we'd use the excuse of like, well, that's just how I'm wired. Is that factory settings? Is that the way God made us and designed us? Or is that the way we've allowed choices and other people's behaviors and opinions to change the wiring a little bit?
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That is, yeah. That is really good, man. Super good. So have my mind running a million places as a parent right there. You know, so
that's the hardest place to coach, isn't it?
Yeah, 100%. 100%. And it's funny because I've talked about that many times. I have these super successful teams and we pour into them. And then when I come home, it's the absolute hardest place to coach is with your kids, you know. So there's Coach Jim Miller. He was, I think he won 10 national championships at Wartburg University. Super wise man, but he had this little thing he would do for wrestling. And his coaches actually called him out one time. He came into practice and he was, I think, a little upset, and he was sort of the thermostat for the room and they didn't have a good practice. And one of his assistant coaches after practice just said, hey coach, like when you come in like fired up and your motivational self, which he normally is, this dude's like a ball of energy, like the whole room responds. But when you come in like mad or angry or whatever, the whole room kind of goes that way. And he realized, so he has like 17 steps from his office to the wrestling room door. It's literally 17 walking steps. So he said he called it a 17 steps. And when he walked in the room, no matter how he felt, when he stepped in, he became Coach Miller high energy. And he said, yeah, so he had to start doing that when he came home too. So he'd park in the garage and when he took the door. So I had to start doing that myself because sometimes I come home and I've either poured it all into my athletes or I'm not in a great mood when I walk in. And so I had to like stop at the door, reset, come in and be dad and be husband and not whatever it was during the day.
He's so spot on, Coach Miller is, and because he's right, because the way we see ourselves really determines who other people become. It's a truism. And so for me, I call it getting in the right lane. When I go home at night, if I am following up from work and I'm on the phone and I flow into the house, I'm generally going to have a tough night parenting or being a husband. Because I'm not getting in the right lane.
Yeah.
So if you ever driven into a big city, you got all these lanes of traffic. If you don't get in the right lane, you're going to have a traffic jam. So for me, when I go home, I've got to understand that when I'm in the right lane, I see my kids and my wife as people and I feel their pain from the day and I have empathy for what they went through. Mm-hmm. When I'm not doing that, I walk in and say, hey, kids, how was your day? When I'm actually doing it well, I've got four kids, 15, 12, 9, and 7. Three youngest are girls, oldest is a boy. One of my daughters is struggling with body image right now, as a lot of our teens are being bombarded with all these images. And she's the most beautiful, just incredible little girl, but she struggles with body image. Today, she was going to the pool and she was really concerned about the swimsuit she was going to wear and whether or not she was going to be pretty or not. And as a dad, it breaks our heart that our daughters struggle like that.
Yeah.
When I'm in the right place of being dad, I walk in looking at my daughter saying, honey, you're beautiful. I know you were wrestling with this today. I just wanted to tell you that I think the world of you. You're incredible. You're exactly what God made you. How did it go at the pool? That's when I'm in the right lane. When I'm not in the right lane and I'm busy solving problems at work and I haven't even thought about my kids, I walk in, hey, guys, how was your day? And she goes, you don't see me.
Yeah.
Every other dad in the world can have the conversation with my daughter. How was your day? I'm the only dad who can be like, honey, I know what you were going through today. How are you doing? Mm-hmm. When I'm in that place and I see people, I minister very different. But my wife has looked at me and I felt this. Maybe you could relate to this. It's easier for me to sometimes win at work than it is at home.
Yes.
And sometimes the last place I want to look is where I feel like a failure. Mm-hmm. So when we get in that cycle of feeling like we're failing at home, eventually it causes men to start dreaming about not going home. So why do men walk away from their families? Not because they don't love them. They just feel like such a failure. They don't want to disappoint anymore.
Yeah.
That's where these messages of how we see ourselves and what we think and those feelings, when we don't take them into the presence of the Lord, they'll lead us to places that we would have never wanted to go. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's the human condition, but being, you know, feelings are fickle, man. Feelings are so fickle. And so as a man, a family man, as a coach, someone who's trying to mentor and lead other people, it's hard not to be run by your feelings sometimes. And then to remember, it is funny. There's so many things in my life that I'm battling a knee injury right now. It's not a terrible one, but I've had a lot of knee injuries wrestling, right? But battling a little knee injury and I work out crazy. So it just drives me nuts when something's not working right. And I thought about this the other day. I was like I'm doing all this therapy stuff on it and all these things. And I was like, I don't know if I've even prayed and asked God to heal me yet. One of the last things, it was like the 15th.
The last resort.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I just thought about that. I'm like, what's wrong with me? Like completely, like just didn't even think about it. I was just doing all these physical things I could, but.
Because you're taught as a kid, like, you got to work hard and pull yourself up by your bootstraps and you're going to be the only one. And there is a part that we have responsibility, but God is sovereign and he's in control. Why often is God the last resort and not the first option? It's because I often do everything in my own strength and then I turn to God.
Yeah, 100%.
And that's, but I think for me, we talked a little bit about principles. It's so the principle of maturity is not a product of age. It's a product of choice. Mm. To mature means, am I making choices based upon what I feel or what God says? That's like, so if there's one principle or a couple guiding principles, this would be one I would want my kids to have, is your maturity is based upon choices. Are you going to choose to believe what you're feeling, what you're thinking, what someone else has told you? Or you're choosing to believe what God has said, which is why it's so important that we're reading the Bible and we're hiding his word in our heart, so we actually know what he says about himself. And in light of that, what does it say about us? But there's a lot of folks that are watching this podcast chat that have turned the page to be another year older, but they're no more mature than they were than when they were a teenager.
Yeah.
And it's not because they don't want to grow. It's often we don't know how to deal with the stuff that's going on inside of us. And rather than deal with it, we just kind of like give up on it. We walk away from it.
Yeah. Yeah. Very. Yeah. As things add up, man, they become more difficult to deal with. It feels like whenever we're trying to do it on our own strength.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Well, kind of changing lanes here. Heath Esslinger is a friend of both of ours.
You guys
did a FCA wrestling event. They're at Elevation Church recently.
Tell me a little bit
about that, because it was awesome.
It was incredible. And my connection with FCA started, several years ago. Mark Ellis, at that point, he was fighting in the UFC. He reaches out to me. He DMs me on Instagram. I'm preaching in Oklahoma, and I get this, like, Mark Ellis, like, is this the real Mark Ellis? We weren't even friends on Instagram, but he had reached out to me. So I texted him back and I ended up calling him, and I sat in the lobby of a hotel and talked to him for about an hour. That first conversation, just heard his heart for what he wants. And we just established this relationship. He goes on to coach up at UVA, and then he leaves that and he goes into FCA wrestling. And we just kind of developed this friendship through that whole process that, 18 months ago, when him and Carl and Heath, they were kind of dreaming about, and what do we do in this place of COVID, and how are we going to minister to people, and how does it change the way we present the gospel? The gospel doesn't change, but we've got to be changing how we're presenting it. Mm-hmm. And they came up with this concept of truth and technique. And man, we just started talking about, what if we did an event, and what if we hosted it at the church? So we hosted this event just a couple weeks ago from when we were recording this. And it was incredible to see the wrestling world come together with faith world, and to create a place that you can talk about faith and it feel normal and not fake or crazy, and it not be just a bad production. But it was a great event. But that's how I got connected to Heath. Just a great man. Love him and love what he's doing, and Carl and all the guys.
Yeah. FCA wrestling is powerful, man. It so over this COVID period, over this COVID time, there were, of course, very few opportunities for people to go compete. So in wrestling, people just started saying, like, hey, man, we have the Olympics coming up. Our athletes need to get some sort of mat time and can't just practice. So people started coming up with these events, and then they just kind of caught on. So you guys doing that event was a lot like the other ones. And so people in the wrestling world jumped in there and watched, man, which is awesome, because you have, of course, like anything, a lot of people of faith and people who don't, people that just wanted to watch some good wrestling matches, but they got to hear the gospel. You know, and it's funny you said it. So it was high level. It was produced really well, what you guys do at Elevation Church. And it's funny because a lot of times in the Christian world, and this has gotten so much better in like 5 or 6 years, but man, you watch a Christian movie and it's brutal. Like, the theme behind it's good, but the movie, the quality's terrible. Or the music used to, like, I love Christian hip hop now, but the music used to be so terrible. You know, so having the high quality that actually represents a high quality God. I mean,
well, we just believe excellence. It honors God and it inspires people. And when we have the greatest message on the planet in the gospel of Jesus Christ, we should give it the best presentation we can, because it is the best message. And to your point, sometimes we're like, well, they're just doing it for the Lord. And Sister Mary can't sing. Take the microphone out of her hand. The girl can't sing. But the cop out is, well, she's doing it for the Lord. I'm like, and she can't sing on key. She's horrible. And so that's where, like, oh, it's a Christian movie. You automatically expect it to suck, because it's B-rated actors with really cheesy lines and a poorly written script. And so I was excited, one, because of my love for wrestling, and to do this partnership with FCA Wrestling. It was wonderful. But then selfishly, we hosted it here at one of our locations, And I knew we were going to have people come to that wrestling meet that would never walk into our church on a Sunday morning. Mm-hmm. Because they're not open to church because previous experience or what they've heard, but for whatever reason, they're not open to that, but they are open to great wrestling. Oh, you mean Ty Walls is on the card and Dom Bradley and Mark Ellis is going to be there with FCA Wrestling. Guy wins an NCAA title. Like, they'll come for that. But then when they're here, they're a captive audience. And now we get a chance to share the gospel. And so I love how this platform of wrestling can be used to spread the greatest message on the planet. I hope we could do a lot more of those with Carl and the guys.
Yeah, I hope you can too. Yeah, and FCA Wrestling on so many levels is powerful. I know that, again, sort of over this COVID period, Tim Hess, he's an FCA Wrestling guy out in California. And, you know, he would host a daily or a weekly Bible study. We would have things we would read throughout the week, but we would all get together and Zoom and have a weekly Bible study. I tell you what, man, that lifted me up so much during those times whenever we were stuck in quarantine and a bunch of great coaches that were on there. But it's a FCA Wrestling guy just taking his time because his heart is just to positively impact the coaches for the Lord, man. So which was great.
Yeah. Well, Sam is such a good dude, like just a great man. And it's been fun to get him. But my first coach I really remember is a guy named Coach Marks. He was my high school coach. He was coaching the elementary team. So he coached me pretty much a lot of my elementary into my high school years. And, you know, again, I mentioned earlier, like what home life was like, but the coach for me, he was the first man I ever remember believing in me, like really, really believing in me. And the weight that his voice carried in my life was significant. We were so poor, Chad, that we couldn't afford new clothes. And so my first new pair of wrestling shoes, Coach Marks bought them for me when I was in eighth grade because we couldn't afford them because it was all hand-me-downs. And I remember opening up that first new pair of shoes and I smelled them. I can still remember the smell of those Asics in the box. But I never put them on. I closed the box and put it back. I never felt good enough to actually wear those shoes. Mm. And part of it was the atmosphere in the home, but I still remember Coach Marks. I might not be able to tell you anything he said to me, but I can tell you exactly how he made me feel.
Yeah. Yeah, that is powerful right there. You know, as coaches, one of our big jobs is to encourage, which literally means like fill with courage, right? Yes. So, and sometimes, and I feel that as a coach, man, because I had coaches that impacted me that way. Like, I'm going to believe in you until you believe in you. I'm going to give you my courage until you have that courage, you know?
Isn't that great?
Yeah, it is. Because the coaches that did that for me are the same, like you said, those are the ones that I know exactly how they made me feel. I know exactly the kind of person I wanted to be because I was around them.
Totally. And that's the power of a coach. But that's why I love part of the mission of FCA Wrestling, to coach the coaches.
Yes. Like,
who's encouraging Coach Parks so that he can keep encouraging? Tim at FCA Wrestling gets a chance to encourage Coach Parks so that Coach Parks can continue to be that voice and that authority in those kids' life to remind them that, no, you can do this. And I believe in you. Like, that's why I love, like, even what you're doing with this podcast, because a lot of high-level performers are going to watch this, but you're going to talk to so many different people that, you know, this, what separates world-class athletes is not the talent level. It's the mental battle.
Yes, 100%.
It's how you see yourself. And it is an absolute fight to see myself. And or again, I mentioned earlier, it's like making choices based upon what God says or what I feel. Mm-hmm. He says I'm more than a conqueror, but I feel like a complete failure. Which one wins? Like, that constant battle that doesn't go away. And I wish I could say, hey, once you turn 40, it goes away. Or once you get six figures, it's gone. Or once you get 5,000 square feet, like, no, it actually just becomes bigger. Because the more responsibility you have, the more that voice of failure starts to creep in. Here's what I learned is because when you start to win, and you know this, Chad, like when you start to win, everybody expects you to win.
Yeah.
So the expectation gets really, really, really high. But as you continue to win, the encouragement gets lower and lower and lower and lower. So it creates this gap. So I preach a sermon. The first time I ever preach, I was like, oh, that's amazing. That's incredible. Do it a couple of weeks in a row. Everybody expects you to deliver world-class performance every week. But after you do it, the gap, the encouragement Nobody's encouraging you after you've done it for a year. That gap, that's where most people fail, is in that gap. It's that expectation and encouragement. Like, we feel like a fraud, or does anybody even notice? Like, that's a hard place to land.
It is, absolutely. And I have to think about that sometimes. One thing my dad always said with wrestling, he's like, if you want to have a good team, your good kids are going to be good. You got to get your average kids above average and your below average kids up to average, you know? So we spend a lot of time with those guys, but I often try to make sure that I remember my real top guys still need me too. And so yes. I got to make sure I go and encourage them. Now that kind of leads me to ask this, because you talked about, you know, coaching up the coaches, man. That's what they do in the FCA, right? In the FCA in general, but FCA wrestling, specifically for us wrestling coaches. I have often felt that's an area that is so important for all leaders. Who's pouring into the CEO? Who's pouring into the pastor? Who's pouring into the coach or the teacher? So for you guys as pastors, who's pouring into you?
Yeah. Well, one, my pastor, Pastor Stephen, is one of the primary voices in my life. I mean, to me, I'm biased in my opinion. I think he's one of the greatest communicators on the planet right now. That's the way he's always been. He's always been that voice of encouragement for me. I've got two accountability partners. One's my brother-in-law. One's a dear friend. That accountability is such a buzzword right now, but you can't hold me accountable for anything that I don't share with you. And so what I see happening more when people get into their, you know, late 30s, 40s, and 50s is they'll have a moral bankruptcy. Is they'll get themselves in a place where they make a choice that, like, where did that come from? And it's not like they woke up one day to say, I think I'm just going to screw up my life today. It starts as a thought or a feeling when you're a teenager that you don't know what to do with it. And then it'll be like, that'll get better when I get older. That'll get better when I get married, or that'll get better when I get out of college, or that'll get better when we do this. And we never deal with the issue. Now, because I'm living in life that I'm not inviting anybody into it, nobody's coaching me, nobody's pastoring me, I get to the point that the pressure's so much, I just give out. That's what I see happening. And generally, it's interpreted like, boy, these dumb people, they're not dumb. They just didn't know how to handle the struggle. They didn't know what to do with it. And so for us in ministry, man, like, I've got to have people that I open my life up to. Because if I don't, the weight and the pressure becomes too much. Like, it will get to the point that I can't do it. There's people will always say, well, God will never give you more than you can handle. That's a lie. That's not true. He absolutely will give you more than you can handle, because it creates dependence upon him and ability to invite others in to carry the burden with you. We're not created to do this thing alone. Like, we're created for community. So I got to have coaches, I've got to have pastors, and I got to have people surrounding me. My commitment to my calling is my willingness to let somebody else carry the burden. Don't tell me you're committed to be the world's best if you're not letting anybody in to carry the burden with you. That ain't true.
Yeah. So tell me about Elevation Church, man. How did you get involved? I mean, you guys are one of the top churches in the world, one of the fastest growing churches in the world, one of the top multi-campus, you know, churches have really, like, other churches did it first, but you guys are just doing a phenomenal job with that model. But Alpha, way back in the beginnings, Elevation.
We're 15 years old. We started with 8 families selling their homes, quitting their jobs, moving to an unnamed city in an unnamed part of the country to be part of an unnamed church. My wife and I were one of those original 8 families. And so we've had the privilege of, man, we could all fit in a suburban 15 years ago. And now we're a little bit bigger than a suburban. But I still see the suburban. When we started the church 15 years ago, my wife and I were pregnant with our firstborn. And we moved into our house on a Friday night. We went to the hospital the next Tuesday and had our firstborn son. He's 15. He's got a couple armpit hairs. His voice is changing a little bit. So when I think of our church, like, I see a 15-year-old, like, we're kind of big, but we don't understand our strength yet. And we still don't understand how it all works out. But it's been amazing just to see how God has used a group of people that just said, I'm available. We're not that smart. We're not that cool. We're not that hip. But I think we were that available. We just said, God, use us. You know, we'll bring you a sacrifice. Use it, God. Use us for your glory.
Yeah. And he has mightily, you know. There's been, and I'll just speak from personal experience, but I mean, we can just, you can just look at the social media and see the number of followers. We had, dang, that church is doing something, you know, but, of course those are just outside things looking in, you know, but for me, when I listen to the podcast, man, whether it's Pastor Steven or yourself or a guest you guys have on there, for one, the quality is always excellent, which I know that can be pressure in and of itself. Like you said, man, you gotta bring like a world-class TED talk every Sunday, you know, cause it's, cause they're so good. Yeah. But there's been many days where I was out for a jog or I was lifting or whatever, man. And I felt like God just spoke to my exact situation through the message. So the things you guys are doing are excessively powerful and meaningful. And I know that you know that, but they really are. So, and for those listening, man, and I'll have everything in the show notes, but you know, go to Elevation Church, whether it's their website or the podcast, to listen to the sermons, and got to move on your heart and speak to you. I promise, man, there's a lot of good stuff there. And I love it that you guys are still so, that you're still so humble as well.
Well, and it's easy to get up on stage and tell you, hey, here's three steps to being a great parent or five steps to have a foolproof marriage. But then you go home and you just fail as a parent or you fail as a husband. And that doesn't help anybody. We don't need pithy statements on how to. What we need is the gospel presented in a way through your weakness and through your struggle that gives people permission for humanity.
Yeah.
We impress people with our strength, but we relate through our weakness. There's a lot of pulpits that really turn into, because this place of the pastor feel like, I can't let anybody see that I struggle. I got to pretend like I got it all together. So it sets up this place where the pastor is just, it comes across like, well, you're just better than everybody and you're telling everybody else what to do. And we've just said, that doesn't help people. That doesn't minister. And I can't live like that. Like the gap it creates where I'm trying to project a person that I know I'm not really that person, that's too much weight. And so we're not perfect people, but we're going to try to use the broken places of our life to let the light of Christ shine through in a way that we give other people hope. Like, man, here's what God's done in his history through the scriptures, but also here's what he's done or what he's doing in that person. So, you know, maybe he can do something in my life too.
Yeah. And I think that more and more that transparency, that showing people really who you are, you know, it's it impacts people in a deeper way. And I love that. I wrote that down, man. You press through strength, you relate through weakness. You know, that's really good. So one of the things I try to do as a coach, but and the only reason I would say I do that is it wasn't my brilliant idea. It's the people I relate to the most do that, right? Totally. They're willing to show you some weaknesses and willing, and you get to see like, hey man, if he can do it, I think I can do it too. Because if they look like Superman, I don't feel like I can do it.
Well, but there's this fear of what if they don't like me when I say, what if they would, people suffer in silence because of their fear of being rejected. I'm going to guess most men that are married watching this podcast, their biggest fear is this. It's the fear that I carry and can still carry is, what if my wife were to think about me what I feel about myself? Mm. It's one thing if I feel like a failure, but if my wife were to think I'm a failure, I'm done. So the fear of that causes you to suffer in silence because you don't say you're struggling to your wife because you don't want her to think bad of you. But the very thing that causes her to have empathy and to lean into you is the very struggle that she's called to cover with you. And God is so good that whatever we expose, he'll cover. But whatever you try to cover, he'll eventually expose because he loves us so much.
Yeah, that is good. That is really good. I like the way you worded that right there. So deep thoughts, man. So these are deep thoughts. And I encourage everybody listening or watching, take notes too. So always take notes. I'll go back and take more notes, you know, later on, I'll listen. And, I don't want to leave these thoughts, to just pass through my brain. I don't want to let these thoughts, I don't want to rely on just my memory to do that. So take notes so I can go back and look later on. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. I mean, you don't remember everything your wife wants you to get at the grocery store. Just memorize. You just
zero times.
Zero. She has to send me pictures and the aisle it's located on.
Yes. Yeah. So, and the worst is my wife will write out a list for me and I'll go there and I'll be like, oh, I'm doing so good. I'll get in line, I check out, and I leave and look at my phone and see, like, text two more things. I'm already leaving. I'm like, ah, no. Well,
I missed it.
Yeah, yeah. So I thought I nailed that one. But so, all right. Well, we kind of talked about this off camera a little bit, but I like to study high performers, and I like to have some things that they do that maybe I could add into my own life or other people can add into their lives. So what are some of your daily non-negotiable self-growth or self-love, which is another kind of a hot term right now, but some things that you do to be your best you on a daily basis?
Yeah. I think for me, I'm learning the value of self-awareness. But I'm also knowing that self-awareness is different than self-conscious or self-deprecating. So let me break that down. Self-awareness is being aware of who God says I am and who he is in this moment. That's self-aware. Self-conscious is wondering, how does the world see me in this moment? I live a lot of life being self-conscious, wondering, how are they seeing me? What do they think about me? It's the place where you walk by somebody and they don't talk to you, and you're like, why are they mad at me? Well, they don't even know your name. But we put ourselves at the center of it, and we wonder, how is everybody else seeing us? And then self-deprecating is the place of saying, the world hates me, God hates me, everybody hates me. But true self-awareness is really, really, really hard. So what I try to do each day, and some days I'm good at this and some days I fail miserably at it, but to have a space that in the psalmist wrote this in the Bible. He says, why so downcast, O my soul? Why so disturbed within me? I try to sit and I try to take stock of, what are my thoughts? Where are they coming from? And how am I interpreting them? So that's where I take it back to that maturity thing. Okay, God, what do you say about this? Now, what do I feel about this?
Yeah.
Because what I think is, man, we are complex. We are very complex people. We're not driven by a single motive. We've got a lot of different motives that are competing for our attention. So I'm up on stage preaching. I've got a lot of motives. I've got the motives of, man, I want to glorify God. I've got the motive, I want to prove my seventh grade teacher wrong because she said I was an idiot. I want my mom to be proud of me. I want people to come to faith in Jesus. I want people to think I'm smart. All of those are there. None of them go away, but I get to choose how I order the list. That only happens with being aware of the motives that are driving me. What I would tell you is the motives you're unaware of are really the ones that are driving you. It's those apps that are on your phone that are hidden behind the main screen, but they're draining your energy. What I try to do is to start to become aware of, what are my motives? What is going on in me? And that's one of my disciplines that I try to take to the Lord. But then when I do it, I say, okay, Lord, what do you think about this? Now, when I'm in a bad headspace and I'm self-deprecating, I feel like he's the principal calling me in to wave his finger at me, telling me he's disappointed at me. When I'm in a better headspace, I start to feel like he's a loving father that's not trying to change my behavior as much as he is trying to like change my heart. Like, hey, LB, Larry, you've been driven for so long to make other people proud of you. Where's that come from? That doesn't go away just because you turn another year older. So for me, one of my daily disciplines I try to do is to be just aware of, what's motivating me, what's driving me, what's on my radar right now that's leading me, because that's how I lead my family, that's how I lead in the job I have, and that's how I lead the people that I work with. So that's one of my main disciplines I try to do each day.
That is really good. It kind of comes back to this saying that we often use, but the way you do anything is the way you do everything.
Absolutely. Well,
so if I'm doing these things from X motive, then it's going to impact everything else that I'm doing. So whether that's a great motive or whether that's a self-driven motive or whatever, you know, so yeah. And I really like that you said that, man. We come at things from many motives, because a lot of times I'm going to relate this to the sports world. So we're like, hey, you can only like this team, right? You can't like more than one team. Well, like, I love OU football. I'm from Oklahoma. I'm a diehard OU Boomer Sooner, but when it comes to NFL, I'm not a big NFL guy. I watch some of my favorite OU players. So I like this team, and this team, right? And so sometimes people in the sports world, like, you can only have this one thought. There's only black or white on this. You can only like this one team. Well, in motives, it's the same thing. It's not like we just have that one motive. You can have several motives, but it's so important what you just said. We get to decide which of those is the most important, man. How do we list those? Is it, I want to step up on stage because I want to look really good? Or is I want to step up on stage because I'm pouring into somebody's heart? Both those might be there. I don't want to look bad on stage, right? But yeah, so I love that. That was.
But they're all there. And the part about this is you don't graduate out of bad motives, but you do get to put it a little lower on the list. Mm-hmm. So they don't go away. And I think so preaching that makes people feel really, really guilty is people say binary choices. You need to do it all for the glory of God or it's all horrible. Mm. And they give you two choices. I've never had one decision in my life, my best decision, be 100% for the glory of God. There's always been a tinge of my humanity. And if you give me two choices, it's all good or it's all bad, I'm default all bad. Like, that's shame.
Yeah.
But permission for humanity isn't excusing your behavior, but it's understanding what's motivating it. And it's giving you the choice next time it comes around. How do you want your motives to be prioritized? They don't go away, but you do get to, like, do I want this high on the list? Because the good question we can ask whether motives is when we look at some of the leading motives, some of the ones that tend to populate the top of the list, what kind of person does that build? What kind of life does that create? So when motives are approval and applause and accolades, again, they're going to be on the list, but when they're at the top, what world does it build? Like, where am I left?
Yeah.
And I used to feel like you're bad because they're on your list. No. They're on the list because it creates dependence on Jesus. It just doesn't have to be at the top of it. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is really good. And in the athletic world, accolades and achievements and all those things, man, those things can drive you in and become the driving force behind what you do. And then your own personal value is based on those. Hey, I'm winning and getting accolades. Life is good. I took a loss, yes. or I'm not competing well. Life is bad, you know? And so I see it so much in athletes that I coach, and I've experienced it myself as an athlete.
Oh, well, it's same thing. So when I was driven by that as an athlete, now I'm an adult who's preaching on a stage. Hey, the number of likes or the number of retweets or the number of followers, like, I can just substitute accolades. And it might not be on the podium at a wrestling meet. It's just on a platform, on a stage in front of a world audience. And so what God is trying to do is to say, are your motives lining up more for my glory over time? Because change is measured over time. I got to measure with a clock or a calendar, not a clock. I can't. But I got to give you permission for where you're at, but now gracefully point you towards, now, where do you want to be? And how can you make choices that line up more with who God said you are and who he wants you to be?
Yeah. So good. So good. So, all right. Well, as we get ready to kind of wind down here, I always like to kind of ask a couple questions here so we can kind of get to know you a little better. Expand upon these as much as you want. But first I want to ask, outside the Bible, what's your favorite book? What book has impacted you the most outside the Bible?
First one that comes to mind is Integrity by Henry Cloud.
Yes.
Henry Cloud is him and Townsend did some great work on boundaries and all those things. But his work called Integrity, it takes the concept that we would have about integrity being don't lie, don't cheat, you know, those kinds of things. That's not integrity. What he calls integrity is leading a whole life, being a whole person. And it's just a great take on integrity to be like, wow, am I really operating from a place of wholeness? So first one off the top.
All right. Very good. Okay. You can expound upon these, like I said, as much as you want. Pick one or pick all three. Okay. I want you to tell me about a hero, a highlight, or a hardship in your life.
Hero, highlight, or hardship. Yep. Oh, man, that's a great question. Hero, gosh, I think, man, Coach Marks, the guy I talked about a little bit earlier, because when I was in high school and he was my coach, I would have said my hero would have been Jeff Blatnick, mm-hmm. Olympic gold medalist. But I'd never met Jeff Blatnick. I don't know how he treated his wife. He could have been an amazing man. He could have been a great father. He could have been a horrible dad. But now looking back, I realize that wasn't a hero to me. A hero is somebody whose life I want to emulate on and off the court. But now at the stage I'm at in life is I want to emulate them more off the mat than they do on the mat.
Yeah.
And so I think even the concept of heroes has really, really changed for me over time. One of my heroes is my mom. You're never going to hear her preach a sermon. No one's ever going to follow her on a podcast, but I had to see her go through just horrible treatment from her husband, my dad. And yet she still remained faithful. She still provided for our family and she showed up. She's never going to appear on a sermon. No one's ever going to like her on Instagram, but she's in every sermon I'll ever preach. She's in every teaching I'll ever give because she's one of those heroes for me. Highlight. Before we started the church Elevation, again, I mentioned earlier, one of five kids, Lonnie, Luann, Leslie, Larry, and Lance. And my background's in PT, sports medicine, athletic training. I did that prior to this church world. And so when we started the church, my family wasn't really receptive. They want nothing to do with faith. They thought I was stupid, gone off the deep end. And so I committed to praying for my sister, Luann, before we started the church. Prayed for her for 17 years. And she would cuss me out over the phone saying, I can't believe you're throwing your life away. Wanted nothing to do with it. But a highlight, a couple of years ago, I was able to get her to come to Charlotte from North Carolina for Christmas. I was preaching and she sat on the front row and she gave her life to Jesus. And then a couple months after that, I was able to baptize my sister.
Yeah.
Here's this person who wanted nothing to do with their ministry, that now the very ministry we created is that, and now it sees her come to faith in Jesus. Another highlight, COVID's been so hard on our families and on kids. My oldest, he's really struggled with depression, suicidal thoughts, taking him to a very dark place. But the very thing my wife and I sacrificed to help create in the beginning is the very thing that gave my son hope. It was the church. It was his friends. It was the sermons from Pastor Stephen. It was all those things that created a safe place for my son to weather the storms in that really, really, really dark season. And so, like, again, those highlights, they're never going to show up on any kind of report, but it's that scoreboard of where I know God won. That's my scoreboard. Nobody else needs to see that. But those are the ones who are like, those are some of my biggest highlights.
Yeah. Yeah. Very good. So, well, Pastor, thank you so much, man, for pouring into us, for giving us your time. I got a lot out of this. I was about to say a lot of wisdom out of this, man, but where can we follow you on social media? And then of course I'll put all this in the show note links.
Yeah. Well, Elevation Church. And then my personal stuff is LBREY. Everybody in church calls me LB, Larry Bry, but it is LBREY.
Okay. So yeah, again, I'll put those sayings on there. So
yeah.
Thank you, man. This is I'm glad I got to get on here and hear you. This was like a sermon. One of the things I love about doing podcasts is I get like free teaching every week. So from whoever my guests are, and then we get to share that with other people. But there were a lot of really important things you said in here that I know we're going to speak to the audience. And I feel like God spoke directly to my heart. So thank you so much.
Thank you for what you do. Like, we need more voices out there that are leveraging the platform, but pointing to something bigger. It's easy to have a platform that points to you. It's really, really hard to find platforms that point to something else. So the fact that you're speaking to people of faith, but people that are just high performers that want to understand, like, how do I do it better? Like, you're ministering and pulling all that stuff into place that says, hey, I'm going to give you that stuff, but I'm going to point to an eternal truth and something that's bigger than me. So thank you for doing that.
Yes, sir. Absolutely. I appreciate that. So, all right, everybody. Well, this has been another episode of Coach P's Perspective. May God bless you, smile upon you, give you peace. Until next time, we're out. Hey, before you go, I just want to tell you, thank you so much for joining us for another episode of Coach P's Perspective. And then a couple things that I would ask. One is hit the subscribe button. That way, every single time a new episode comes out, man, as soon as you open up your podcast app, it is right there, ready to roll. You can listen to a new one. The second is, if you would, and we earned it, give us a 5-star review, a quick written review, especially if you're on Apple Podcasts. That's great. You know, one of the ultimate goals is to grow this show and to positively impact as many people as possible, and that helps. And then lastly, jump over to lanefrostbrand.com. Visit my friends over there. You know, this is an incredible company, family-owned, operated, honoring the late, great Lane Frost, who is, you know, a former rodeo champion, was one of my idols growing up, and this is one of my absolute favorite companies. So if you need ball caps, t-shirts, all kinds of apparel, again, go over to lanefrostbrand.com and check them out. Thank you guys again. Much love and God bless.
Podcast complete, now me working overtime. I'm just a vessel for the spirit. When it's in me, then I shine. If the clay gets broken, he makes some whole new pottery. Repent for your sins, tell Satan to stay up off of me. With a new step, CSL rep, pop, lock and rock. Coach P, who never stops.